listening to tonight's show. You can connect with Take Two Radio on Twitter at Take Two Radio and at Dawn Take Two Radio. You can also look us up on Facebook at Take Two Radio. Check out our website at TakeTwoRadio.com and follow us on Blog Talk so you can stay up to the minute of each episode as we add it. Each episode is always available for download immediately following each broadcast. And you can also download every podcast on iTunes. Thank you for joining us.
Well, hello and welcome to Take Two Radio. And I am Dawn, the co-host, and I'm here with our wonderful host, Pam. Hello, Pam.
Hello. She did it. Well, she did it again. She took the phone away from me. She's running the show.
Well, you know, sometimes it's necessary. But, no, seriously, we kind of reversed roles a little bit tonight in the last couple of shows because Pam has really been ailing. And how are you feeling today, Pam?
Well, I know I sound better, but, you know, you get really weak from this,
yeah,
this old flu thing, whatever's going on, plus people at home being sick, and I was up all night with my son. So that's one of those things.
I can tell you, you do sound better than you did a couple of days ago when I talked to you, and I'm thankful that it seems like you're making a turn in the right direction, at least. At least if the sound of your voice is any indication, comparatively. So glad that you're on the mend, hopefully. And but the other reason why we've reversed roles tonight is, one, to give you a break, of course, and not have to talk as much. But we have the show of shows tonight. And this is a show that I have been stoked about ever since we got it all set up and lined up. Because for all the Guiding Light fans out there, we have Robert Newman and Kim Zimmer with us tonight. And I want to bring on Robert. Hello, Robert. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so very excited about you guys being here tonight. It is such a treat and an honor, no doubt, being a longtime fan of Guiding Light. So thank you for agreeing to come back on the show. We so enjoyed having you on before, talking with you and catching up about DL and what you've been up to since. So thank you so very much.
I had a good time, and it's good to be back again. Do we have Kim yet?
No, not yet.
And all I can think as the show was opening that she is going to make her entrance in typical Reba Shane style.
So she's going to be late?
Well, not to be late, but just to make that grand entrance, you know, when everyone else is alive, you know, like she did so many times on Guiding Light. So, you know, that is definitely staying the part. But anyway, in the meantime, we're waiting for her to call in. How are you and how have things been going?
I was just saying to your co-host there, who sounds under the weather, that I had a couple of weeks under the weather, too. I was pretty down, flat for a while. This whatever this thing is, bug, flu, whatever the heck is going on, it knocks you down, man. And I didn't have, like, a temperature, I mean, a fever or anything like that. But I was definitely flat on my back for about a week.
Well, I felt like I had 110 temperature, but yet I was freezing to death for 2 days. It was horrible.
And then the bad news for you is that it lingers.
Yeah.
It really lingers.
I think this is like the fifth day, and I'm like, okay, this is enough already. But
yeah.
especially when you got kids to take care of that have the same thing, you know?
I was saying that after about the 10th and the 15th day, so
good luck with that.
Sorry for the bad news.
Oh, no.
What a way to bring me up, yay.
otherwise, I'm fine. As you know, I was out in L.A. for quite a while. I was shooting a low-budget film out there, a science fiction film, and mm-hmm. now I'm back home. I got back home right after the new year, and it's so good to be home. And I'm getting ready to head back out to L.A. in a couple of weeks to shoot a bit on Crystal Chappelle's web series.
Woohoo!
Venice, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. She sent out the scripts about a week ago, and they're good. They're really good. And I'll be working a bit with one-on-one with Jordan Clark, who, awesome. Which is awesome. Yeah, it's great. And, of course, working directly with Crystal. And I went back and sort of caught up on that series. And it's really something to watch. It really is. To think that for Crystal, this was just something, you know, sort of her brainchild that happened a few years ago after Guiding Light went off the air, and now they're getting ready to shoot their fourth season of it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a working model, you know. There's money coming in. There's people get paid. There's, you know, mm-hmm. there's enough to produce
Yay.
The show. That she's got a thing going on there, and I believe she just started another show, right? The Grove.
Yeah.
To look at yet, but
I'm really
proud of her, you know, for mm-hmm. taking a leap of faith and putting together everybody's trying to figure out new media and digital media and how it's going to work online, and this is something I'm on the national board of directors for SAG-AFTRA, you know, so at the union, we're speaking about this all the time. How will things work on the net, on the internet? Because that's where the business is going. And Crystal, to me, is part of those people who are pioneering this kind of thing, and trying to figure it out, and she is figuring it out. It's really great. So, looking forward to that.
She can teach Prospect Park some things, you know.
I guess so. I'm still kind of curious to see how all of that works out. We'll see. We'll just see.
Yeah.
I'm really pleased.
I would have thought they would have called her by now.
They may
for sure.
I don't know.
I think it's coming back.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be so exciting to see you and Jordan and Crystal all of the same, you know, series. for the GL fans, that's always a great thing when we can see some of our faves from the show on something different
mm-hmm.
and all working together, you know, even though
mm-hmm.
you're playing different characters. But it's great to see that dynamic and that interaction all over again. So really excited for that to come out and to be able to see that.
Well, part of my agreement to do it was I told Crystal that we had to have like a bathtub scene together or something like that. Which doesn't really work with her character, but you know, I don't know how you work it out, but we have to have a bathtub scene together. But I have to say, I didn't see one in the final script. So
you're not playing like the pool boy or anything, where you know she could bring you into the cabana. And...
I think my pool boy days are over.
Oh no!
I think when you're my age and you're the pool boy, it's creepy.
Yeah, now that could be. So, well, it sounds like you've had some really exciting things going on, and you've been very busy, no doubt. And so now you're kind of in a little bit of a break, which I'm sure it's like you say, it's always good to get home. It's good to go, but it's good to get back home and just be back to the normal things of life, you know, when you can.
Yeah, I mean, Britt, my wife, and I have. We've adjusted to this thing, to my career being a different thing now, where I'm on the road much more than I ever had been with Guiding Light. You know, that one of the great, great blessings of Guiding Light was just being home a lot, you know, and really
mm-hmm.
being in a job for an actor where you can raise your children. You know, my children are now 20 and 23 years old, but raising them through those early years, for an actor to not be traveling constantly is unusual. And that was one of the great things that I got from Guiding Light. That time now of raising my kids, of course, well, it never really ends, but the younger part of it's ended, I guess.
Right.
And now I'm in this different kind of a career where I'm on the road quite a bit, whether it's, you know, 8 weeks in Philly doing Gypsy with Tova Felcha, or it's out in L.A. for 3 months doing, you know, various things there. And Britt and I just work it out. You know, we just work it out. And if it's a real long period of time, then she'll come and visit me. But we, you know, we talk on the phone all day long. We text like, you know, like we're 12-year-olds, constantly texting back and forth from cross country. And this is our lifestyle now. But it's new and it's different, and I'm thankful for it. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
tough.
Well, I have a question for you. I read Kim's book. And
mm-hmm.
it was phenomenal, by the way, and I'm really excited to talk with her when she calls in about it. But I was curious, do you think that's something that you would ever do? Do you see that in your future, maybe writing a book?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I just read Crystal's book, too.
Oh my God, I read that one.
It's pretty great. It really is pretty great, and it reminds me of, I think both of those books, you know, have a real strong sense of what working on a soap really is like, and unlike Tootsie, Soap Dish, any number of films or television programs that have tried to, you know, somehow capture, you know, I find most of what's done about soap operas and film and television is really mocking soap operas. That's what they're really doing. Mm-hmm. They're making fun of the medium, you know, and I think, you know, in some ways Tootsie had some realistic elements to it, but the premise itself was to me very unrealistic. And Soap Dish kind of captured it, but sort of almost in like a Saturday Night Live skit way it captured it, you know. And all that to say, I know I haven't answered your question yet.
Yeah.
But I really feel
okay.
like
he's teasing us.
Sure, I'm not sure if I were to write a book right now that it would really add anything to the combination of Kim's book, Crystal's book, and I haven't read other people's books. I think both of them did a really outstanding job of not kind of the good, the bad, and the ugly of working full time on a soap opera. It's a very, very, very difficult medium to work under. And it causes a lot of joy and a lot of stress at the same time. You know, there are good times, there are bad times, good storylines, bad storylines, just good days, bad days. And they seem to kind of get all those things in their books. And so I don't know that I would add anything to that. I do have in my mind something more along the lines of a screenplay or maybe even a theatrical play that would somehow kind of capture more of what soap opera really is. I think about the film Broadcast News. Do you know that film? I love that film.
Mm-hmm.
It captures, I think, you know, there's many comical things in that film, but I think it also gives a more realistic look of what it's like behind the scenes of the news genre. That
right.
film, as opposed to like Anchorman,
with
Will Ferrell, who also shows some stuff behind, but it's a comical. You know, I feel like the broadcast news style of a soap opera film or series or, you know, whatever has really never been done.
Mm.
And I could see maybe working towards something more like that, and it wouldn't be just only about my own experiences. It would be, you know, probably encompass a lot of things.
Well,
you
know, I say make it into a musical.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Kim and I, when Kim comes on, we'll give you a preview of Guiding Light the Muse, or Josh and Reed the musical.
There you go.
But
I can just picture it in my head, you know, after like watching Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat, if they could make a musical out of that, you know, you guys could do this with it.
Yeah, because Joseph's story is so similar to soap opera.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, Bible. Yeah, sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Go ahead.
Right. It's the soap Bible. Come on. Get with
yeah,
it, Robert.
Yeah, there you go.
You should know this.
The Bible according to soap kind of thing.
Right. Right.
Right.
Well, speaking of you and Kim, do you think there's an opportunity that you and her will work together down the road again?
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't think that our time together is done at all. I mean, I, you know, even when we found ourselves on the same stage doing Curtains, you know, that was a total
mm-hmm.
surprise to both of us. You know, I was working toward. She tells a pretty funny story about that when she was negotiating her contract, and there was something in there about, well, she'll tell the story, but her agent finally said to her, yeah, this guy, Robert Newman, and she was like, Robert, what are you talking about? You know, because I had already signed on with him, you know. And then there she was, you know, and that was just a sort of a flukish kind of thing. I was meeting with them in an audition situation like you do for everything. And we started talking about the soap, and I said, gosh, you know, I just want to say, I think Kim Zimmer would be fantastic for this role that Deborah Monk played on Broadway. And they were like, hmm. And then the next thing I heard, they were, you know, talking to her about coming on board. And it was great. It was just a wonderful show, and she was spectacular in it, and it was a joy. And so I can see us down the road, whether it's on stage somewhere or maybe one of these web series or who knows, you know. But I don't think our time of working together is done. We've often sort of joked about doing George and Martha and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, because that's kind of who we are anyway, kind of fighting and screaming and weeping and gnashing of teeth kind of stuff, you know. I've suggested to her a couple of times doing something like the musical A Little Night Music or something like that. Maybe even Gypsy somewhere. I don't know. You know, I did that recently with Tova Felcha, and I could see doing it with Kim Moore. So we'll find each other again.
Well, that would
Don will make sure of that.
Well, I don't know how much pull I have, but of course I'm always rooting for you guys to at least appear in something together because of the, you know, the dynamic that you two had and the chemistry you had on the soap. It was you know, unsurpassed in my opinion. So.
Well, thank you. We enjoy each other and we trust each other, and you know, those are the two best things you can bring to the table with somebody you're acting with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have a good time, and trust is the big thing, whether it's on television or on stage. You have to trust the person that you're with, because you know, it's one of the great things about Kim as an actress has always been her level of risk taking. And it is. It's hard to put yourself out there, you know, and really take these big bold, make these big bold choices. And if the person you're working with isn't going to go along for that ride, then it doesn't work. It's harder to make it work. Let's put it that way. I mean, I think Kim can pretty much make anything work with anybody she works with, quite frankly. But you know, it's just a much better situation when you know that the person's going to be there to catch you when you fall and to rise up with you when you rise up. And I think we had that going on for quite a while on the show.
It's hard to create chemistry. You just have to have it.
I don't think you can manufacture chemistry.
Yeah. I mean, you can tell.
I think that's just... that just can't happen. It's just something that happens between two actors and they just work. And I don't think you can predict it. You know, we had that makes me think about when they brought on, actually, you know what? I'm not going to tell that story. Let's go on to something else.
Okay. You can leave names out.
I don't think that would reflect well with the person I was going to tell the story about. But, you know, there are times when you're opposite somebody and you're just kind of like, this just isn't working. You know?
Yes.
That's the way it goes. So you guys can talk about that without me.
Well, we're looking forward to her being on, and I'm sure she will have plenty to say about, you know, the experiences on Guiding Light, experiences with you opposite her, starring on, you know, starting the soap with her and just beyond that. So it's going to be really fun to hear what she has to say on a lot of different things. So it'll be really good. Now, in terms of the screenplay, when you mentioned you might would like to do that at some point, do you have any ideas in mind about who, if you were going to cast it, who would you pick?
That's a hard question because, you know, I think my knee-jerk answer to that would be probably to stay away from soap people to cast it.
Mm.
And not because not at all because I don't think soap people are right for it. But I wouldn't want it to be something about us playing each other, you know. And it's not that I'd want big stars doing it either. And also I think you're thinking about, you know, you've got to think about time periods and ages of characters. This is not something I've really, like, thought, you know, way through to where I know what kind of characters I would use. But let's say that I wrote a Robert and Kim kind of, you know, characters backstage. I wouldn't cast them. I wouldn't write them, I don't think, at our age. today. I think I would write them as we were probably closer to 25 or 30. You know, so I wouldn't be using us to play those roles. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I don't know that I would discount an actor's possibility of playing a role because they work on daytime. I don't think I'd do that either. But, you know, that's so far down the road in the process. I haven't seen it out. Yeah, something like that would work out. I really don't. Again, you know, kudos to Crystal and also to Michael O'Leary, you know, who's been putting together a web series for a while and has, you know, shot a bit of that. And you know, just people who kind of think outside the box and try to create something that's brand new. It's a hard thing and it's a really scary thing. And my hat's off to them for giving it a shot.
Yeah, we've got a call coming in now, so I don't know if this is Kim or not. Pam's checking, but let's hope, you know. But, yeah, I was curious, you know, beyond what your current projects have got going on, have you got anything else brewing that's going to be happening after that?
I've got a couple of things there, but, you know, I really just have I'm sorry to make your show less interesting, but I just have a thing about not talking about stuff until they're signed.
Oh,
I mean,
definitely. No,
honestly, you know, this business has gotten so whack.
Attention, everybody. I'm sorry to interrupt, but the queen has arrived.
She was in the room. First of all, Robert, you're so used to this by now.
I am.
I don't know how I'm getting through this
Kim
chewing without
make a,
Robert.
Kim was going to make a big entrance, and I said, oh, she's going to be late.
Kim, this is Dawn, and it's nice to have you with us. Thank you for being here.
Oh, my God, I'm so sorry I'm late. I apologize.
Look, it better late than never is what I say. And although I realize that is one of the things that you hate is being late and for people to be late. I told Robert at the beginning of the interview, I said, you know, this is so Rita Shane. She's going to make that grand entrance. You know, it has nothing to do with being late. It's just the whole grand entrance. You know, how many times on Got Any Light did Rita do that, you know?
Exactly.
Pass the party, steal the scene. I mean, it was always, always indicative. So, but it was such a pleasure having you with us. And
thank you. Hi, Robert.
Hi, sweetheart. How are you?
Good.
Are you wearing a red dress?
No, I'm not. I should be, though. I'm in San Francisco for the Super Bowl.
Ah, there you go.
I should be wearing red and gold.
Yeah,
right. There's
yeah.
a lot of that going on this weekend for sure.
Yes. I'm sorry if I interrupted. What deep and heavy stuff were you talking about?
I was tap dancing as fast as I could.
Yeah.
And I was listening to the sounds of the audience snoring away while I was talking about, you know, when I get sort of lofty about things.
Yeah, I know.
So,
I love
so
that
you know
in
what?
You.
I'm going to sit here and sip on my beverage, and you go ahead and talk.
Oh,
away.
That's right. It's beverage time for you.
It's 7:44 where I am.
Yeah, I just got up 2 hours ago. I'm on a theater schedule now.
And you have a show, and you have a show in a couple of hours, probably,
yes.
right?
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
Well,
about
speaking of shows, what has Kim Zimmer been up to since Guiding Light? Let's just catch up, if you will.
Well, as unlike Robert, I've been going back to my roots and doing a lot of theater, which is something that I always dreamed of doing when Guiding Light. I never thought Guiding Light would go off the air, first of all, but if I ever decided to leave the show again. Theater was where I was going to set my sights. And I've done fairly well. I've been on the road with the First National Company of Wicked for 6 months now, which I can hardly believe. It seems like it's been 6 weeks. And that's been I've been touring all over, mostly the west side of the United States. We were in Hawaii for 8 weeks. And it's just been so much fun to be able to explore these cities that Wicked has landed in, and it's the most gratifying thing in the world to be a part of a show that gets the response from the live audience that, that Wicked does. The people are so appreciative of it. And I met a woman at the stage door last night who's seen the show 63 times.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so it's kind of crazy that, you know, and it was ironic that right next to her were two college girls. This was the first time they were ever seeing it. And they were like, we're coming back. We're going to come back next Thursday. We're going to try to see it three more times before you leave. You know, it's just, it just appeals to so many different age groups and sexes, and everybody can relate to something in this musical. So it's so gratifying to be a part of it. I've really enjoyed it.
I know it's one of my niece's favorites, and she's probably one of those people that have seen it 63 times, too.
Yeah. It's one of those shows. So,
what part do you play?
Pardon me?
What part do you play?
I play Madame Morrible, who's the head schoolmistress at the university that the two witches meet at, and I kind of take a journey through. I start out as kind of a sweet grandmotherly mentor, and I kind of turn, I myself turn a little wicked by the end of the play. and then I go off to jail by the end. So it's a lot of fun. I like it because I do take a journey from the beginning of the play to the end of the play. So, and we just had one of the they call them in the theater creatives. One of the producers, not Joe Mantello, who directed the original, he's coming next Friday, but one of his sidekicks has been here for the last couple of days, and I actually for the first time have gotten the opportunity to actually rehearse scenes, because I was just kind of thrown into it. So we got notes and we worked through scenes because the big boss is coming next Friday. So that's great. You know, it's been wonderful. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, congratulations.
Well, yes.
Hello.
6 months. 6 months is a great run, you know, too, and to still be going, and you know, and for you to say it feels like it's only been 6 weeks, that tells you that it's, you know, how much fun it must be for you to be in the theater and doing what you love.
It is. I don't know if I'd feel the same way if I were in one place for 6 months, but the fact that I've been touring this show and I've gotten to see other parts of the country and meet different kinds of fans, I would love to say that I would be able to survive a Broadway run for a year, 6 months or a year. It's just, I think that's what keeps the road companies so fresh, is that we do have opening nights every 4 to 6 weeks. You know, we're in a new city. It's a new opening night. So that's what I've really enjoyed about touring. As opposed to Ron Raines, who hated being out of New York when he was touring with Follies. He was just like, well, good luck with that touring thing. He sent me the funniest emails about being on the road. How you doing? You still hanging in there? And I was like, I'm having a ball, Ron.
Hey, Kim, any sense of, like, being disoriented with each theater you walk into? Is there a significant change in the space, or does the sizing of the stage change every time you're in a theater?
Because the set is always the same. The floor, we travel the flooring, we travel, you know, the only thing that changes is the distance of the front row to the front of our stage in every theater. Las Vegas, it felt like the audience was a mile away from us. Here in San Francisco, they're right on top of us. You know, so that's fun, too, to have those adjustments to make. Good question, Robert.
Well, I was just thinking about how when we did Curtains in Houston, and remember then when we changed the set to Paper Mill Playhouse, there were changes. You know, the proscenium dimensions were different, the floor dimensions were different, and so the set had this sort of, I think it got a little narrower or something at Paper Mill. We lost a few feet here and there, and I was wondering if, you know, when you're 6 months on the road, if it were if it were shifting every single time, it would.
No,
I would think it would take a take one performance to sort of get used to it, and then you'd be used to it.
I don't think they book this show into theaters that can't facilitate our
set
as it arrives. Yeah.
And the set travels, like you close in one place. The
absolutely.
Set travels, and you've got a few days before before you reopen.
Yeah.
What's the quickest turnaround?
The quickest turnaround has been like 3 days, which isn't bad at all.
Yeah,
we usually close a show on a Sunday night. We travel on Monday, and the first show is usually Wednesday night.
And do you have to re-tech? No, right?
Personally?
Every theater that you go, new theater that you go into, do you have a full-on tech rehearsal again before you open that night?
No, all we do is a sound check, just a sound check. Yeah.
All right. Well, my part of interviewing you.
I know, but we keep saying we're going to talk about this, and the two of us, and we haven't done that yet.
And how much are they paying you, Kim?
Oh no, I'm not going to talk about that. I'm sure fans of the show already know what I'm being paid. Like they always did on Guiding Light. They always seem to know more about what I was being paid than I did.
She's getting paid with flying monkeys.
There you go.
That's ironically exactly what they were paying us on Guiding Light when we were working in BPAC.
I was going to say, I have a lot of monkeys throw their poo at me when they're up on the cage.
It's nothing like showbiz, huh?
Yep.
Are there any real animals in that play? I don't remember.
No, there are.
There's no real animals. Oh, right.
No real animals.
And the cast adores you, and you adore the cast, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's great. It's great. I've made some good friends here. I mean, we're having a kind of a turnaround right now. We're losing a lot of our ensemble guys and gals who have been with the show 3 and 4 years, and so we're having, which is going to be fun again too, to have new fresh performers coming into the show. So that's what it's all about.
Any talk at all about you maybe going into the Broadway production?
Well, not to my agent.
Outside of like the bathrooms.
Yeah, no. It's just bathroom conversation at this point.
Okay. Right. Kim, I wanna first of all thank you for writing the book.
Oh, thanks. Yes.
It was for any Guiding Light fan. It was such a rare, just a great treat to be not only taken on the journey of your experience with being on Guiding Light and reliving some of the storylines, but just your candid take on it all, and just your honesty. And it was, and one of the things that I wanted to mention to you that I read that just kind of struck home for me was, for one thing, I never knew that you were an avid golfer, and I didn't know that for years you have come to the Duke Children's, classics.
Yeah, you sound like you're from the Carolinas somewhere.
I am from North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
I guess a giveaway. But I'm about 20 minutes from Duke Children's Hospital. And so all these years, I was like, I can't believe, because you were my favorite.
I was right there. You never came to the golf course?
I never came to the golf course. And I was in your vicinity for a number of years because I worked for a children's charity, and it was a timber charity, and the money we raised went to support Duke Children's Hospital. So I was there many times, and we got taken on the tour of the hospital, which is a beautiful facility.
Exactly.
It is. And the gentleman I was working for at the time had given like $1 million towards one of the wings in the children's hospital, and it was quite elaborate, but it was always so humbling to go in the the NICU ward and see those
what brought me back every year was touring that hospital and seeing the miracles that were happening there. I mean, I played in that golf tournament enough years that I would meet kids that were in the hospital when I toured the preemie wards, you know, and 10 years later, here they were coming up to me and you know, saying, from what I understand, you stood over my incubator, you know, so that always, you know, it was always very touching to meet these kids who, you know, survived such a traumatic birth, you know, coming into the world with so many, you know, hooked up to so many tubes and monitors and, you know, you look at them and you think there's no way this little, you know, foot-long baby is ever going to survive, and they do.
Yeah. And the one thing that always, the first time I ever toured that hospital, you know, I'm a mother of three children myself, and so to go in that hospital and to see those small babies, you know, which sit in the palm of your hand in some instances, and just, you know, thank the good Lord that my children were healthy. I mean, you know, not only, it would strike a chord in anyone, but for a mother particularly, I think if you're a mother and you go in there and you see that, it is just it is so eye-opening. It really, you know, makes you appreciate all the more that your children are healthy.
We had a few times, I think, didn't we, Kim, where we toured that hospital together?
Yeah.
There was always lots of tears.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
well, I toured one year when I was pregnant.
Oh, wow.
And that was that was rough.
Yeah, I bet.
I actually went back, what's it been now, 2.5, 3 years ago when I was doing Annie down there in Raleigh. I set up a day, I had a time off one day, and I went over, and I can't remember the wonderful woman's name who used to take us around.
Yeah, right.
And she's still there. And she met me, and we went around room to room to room, just like we used to do during the tournament.
Right.
And it's still just complete. And the work they do there is stunning. It's absolutely stunning. You see a little baby that's barely the size of your hand, you know, in an incubator, and they somehow manage to keep that little child alive. It's just amazing what they do there.
They say, although I'm a Carolina fan, I'm a big, you know, diehard Carolina fan, and you know, if you've been to this part of the country, then you know that the Duke-Carolina rivalry is second to none.
Probably
one of the biggest in the country.
Oh,
and, you know,
definitely.
Of course, Michael Jordan. But we are the only, UNC is the only university that can tout that we had Michael Jordan. So, you know, it's like, you know, he's unbelievable. But, so we love Michael and what he means to us as far as being in North Carolina and what he went on to be.
I was involved in Michael's first tournament when they named it the Michael Jordan Celebrity Golf Classic, which took place in Greenville,
mm-hmm.
North
mm-hmm.
Carolina. And his first year playing pro ball, when it was called the East Carolina Celebrity Golf Classic or something for the Ronald McDonald Houses, Michael gave, the first year of his professional contract, he gave $200,000 to that charity, and then they named it the Michael Jordan Celebrity Golf Classic.
Yeah.
So that was, he's a special person.
He really is. He's a phenomenal human being. He's done, you know, so much to give back to society. And
except he couldn't get my daughter into USC.
Oh, no.
having a letter when you're a Yankee and having a letter from Michael Jordan to get your, you know, your daughter from New Jersey into UNC, it just didn't do it.
I will never forget some years back, this is a funny story about Michael, I was down in Charlotte for a work conference and was in, you know, the hotel there. And so I'm sitting there, we were kind of waiting to check in, and all of a sudden here comes this gentleman. He walks right up to the desk, well, he's on his cell phone, and he had glasses on at first, and I thought, oh, it looks like Michael Jordan. And he took the glasses off, and he's just standing there. There's no entourage or nothing like you would expect. But they waited on him, and, of course, then the bellhops came, and they had two carts full of luggage. You know, they're falling behind into the room. And he comes back down, and he sees me because I'm still sitting there waiting to check in. And that just goes to show you who I was in relation to him, you know. But needless to say, I'm sitting there, and he comes back down, and he just flashes that signature, you know, what you see in all the Hanes commercials, smile, you know, hey.
Right.
And he goes right out the front door, gets into a black sports car and drives away. But it, ironically, he was in town because the Charlotte Bobcats were having their training and their scouting sessions, and he was in
right.
that. So that's where he stays when he's in town, apparently.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was just like, well, okay. But it was really neat to see him because he's all over the place, and to have him come home to Carolina, you know, is a rare treat for us. So we're always glad
right.
he's here. So now let's talk about Guiding Light, because you had probably every possible storyline concocted for Reba Shane that could have been concocted, and you know, and that's not even including the number of times you died, came back on the show, and this and that. Is there a favorite storyline of all the storylines, you know, that you played?
Well, I don't know if you already asked Robert this question, because I think we'd probably answer the same way. We loved any story that had. Pardon me?
I said it goes out to both of you.
Yeah, well, we always, I know that I've always said, and I know Robert has too, that any story that involved, well, for me, Reva and the Lewis men, any story that involved me dealing with Billy, Josh, and HB was my favorite. You know, we had a storyline that we referred to as the Cat on the Hot Tin Roof storyline, which was when Josh was in the wheelchair and Reva was married to HB and Billy was Gooper trying to, you know, cause all kinds of problems. And we had great memories of the time the four of us spent together playing out that story. So I would have to say those were my favorite times, were when Larry Gates was in rare form as H.B. Lewis.
Yes. And Larry Gates, I loved when he played H.B. because you always, you know, it didn't matter what you were doing. You would drop what you were doing to hear what he was kind of like E.F. Hutton. When he spoke, you listened. And you couldn't, and you believed every word he said. You had no reason to discount anything he said.
Yeah, even if it wasn't in the dialogue, he found a way to make them pearls, you know.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
He was an extraordinarily honest actor, you know, and every single thing he said as HB would just, you know, that's what he brought to the table, was sort of that presence, and you can bind his personality with that voice that he had, that amazing, you know, delivery that he had. And, you know, everything HB did was honest and true, but that was also who he was as an actor. So always great working with Larry.
Yeah.
And I would agree, of course, that, you know, there was, to me, there was that pristine, perfect time when it was you and Jordan and Larry and, you know, Krista and Carol. You know, it was like that whole time period, which I guess we're talking about the mid-80s sometime, right?
Yeah.
So we're talking about sort of mid to late 80s. Yeah.
85, 86.
And I always, of course, have that image of that first Josh and Reva wedding.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think I've talked about this before in interviews, so I'm sorry, but, you know, this perfect moment of Kim on the lake in the white dress and the rowboat and
Morgan England.
Morgan rowing the boat. I always remember
the funny
moment.
In his t-shirt.
and when you guys pulled up in the rowboat, Morgan typically jumped out of the boat, and I remember looking over at, you know, the wardrobe people kind of like, oh, I can't believe he just did that. He just jumps in the water. He jumps in the water to bring the boat in. You know, but, you know, this beautiful, beautiful shot of Kim coming across the water. And that whole day was just a stunning day. It was a great day to, it was a lot of laughter. In some cases, I think for you and Larry, it was a little too much laughter.
Oh, yeah. We did the poopy dance. We did a lot of poopy dances that day.
I know what you're talking about, and I'm not going to say.
I think, And we had friends at that wedding, too. Gail and David Wingo Kim were at that wedding.
Right,
and,
yeah.
I think Betty Ray was also at that wedding, right?
Wasn't Betty Ray was. She was in the wedding,
yes,
yeah.
Betty Ray was the casting director who cast both of us, right? Didn't she cast you
yes.
as well?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. She was in the wedding as
she
one
got
of the
to dress up
wedding.
And wear
yeah.
a hat. And, yeah.
Yeah, it was just a special day. A lot of great things happened on that day. It was a beautiful
yeah.
episode.
Well, day, and that was like over 3 days. I mean, because I remember at
yeah.
night we'd go into someone's cabin and play poker after
That's
shooting.
Right. Yeah. And then, of course, the whole wheelchair thing also included the fountain scene.
Oh, right, the infamous
the
fountain scene.
The most
infamous
replayed scene of Josh and Reba in the history of time, I think. Well,
yeah.
of Reba. Yeah, I was in that scene, but...
Well, that storyline also involved the, remember the rain dance?
Making it rain. Yeah.
Lots of memories.
That was a great story.
Yeah.
Well, one of the sweetest things that I love seeing on The Guiding Light was Reba's interaction with her dad.
That
to me was just always such a sweet scenes. And, you know, you just, your mom and dad, the characters that played your mom and dad on there, they were phenomenal actors. But it was just always so, I mean, it was no wonder that Guiding Light was, you know, not only my favorite, but the favorite of many, many fans out there. Because that sense of family from the Lewis family or the Bowers, or the Spauldings.
Yeah.
Well, the Spauldings were probably the most dysfunctional with Alan and being the catalyst. But you know, there was just such a sweetness about, you know, your mom and dad. That
oh, yeah.
The mom and dad dynamic. And, you know, just I'm so glad that was part of it because it helped.
Oh, yeah.
Really.
I said that in my book, too, that my father, my own father used to say that Audrey Peters playing Sarah looked more like my mother than my real mother did, you know, because he watched the show and he loved her. And he'd say, she looks more like your mother than your real mother does. And I adored Audrey Peters. I think that was a huge mistake they made. I don't know whose idea that was. I don't know what writing team we had at that time. That when they made the decision to kill off Sarah, that was a big mistake. Reba without her mother was, you know, like a day without sunshine.
Mhm. Very, very true. And you could always tell. And you know, Reba's mom would always rein her in. You know, she'd tell.
Oh yeah.
You know, Reba's dad always had that. You could tell that Reba had her dad just kind of wrapped around his finger. Sunshine, but
oh,
her
yeah.
mom was the one
yep.
that kind of gave her the reality check.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely. I think if Sarah had been around, Reba never would have lied to Josh about having cancer.
Yeah, that's right.
Sarah would have told him.
That's right.
Yeah, Sarah wouldn't have waited for you to tell. She would have waited.
No.
She just went right to the source. So,
Joshua, come over here. I got something to tell you.
she had that way of putting goosebumps on your back pretty fast. With her,
That's true. And, you know, one thing I will say that I thought Guiding Light did so well, and that was the way they cast, everyone that played on the show. But, like, you know, mm-hmm. as Mar and Shane were getting older, and, you know, they cast the actress for Mara. It was, I thought at one point she could be your daughter. I thought,
which one are you talking about?
Lindsay. It was Lindsay. I can't.
Oh, Lindsay McKeon.
Lindsay McKeon,
yeah.
Yes. Yes. Now, both really, you know, but Lindsay McKeon, there was just something about her, and I thought, is this Kim Zimmer's daughter in real life, you know? She certainly could have passed, but there was just all, even, you know, the family dynamics, the Bowers, they all, you know, all the casting, it always, I guess that's why Guiding Light just seems so believable for so many, because of the way everyone, you know, it was such a family. I mean, you not only were a family of the cast, but the show itself
right.
had that dynamic that it made you feel like you were part of it, you know.
Yeah.
I just ran into there was a lady that stopped me in the supermarket just today. actually at Costco. And she said, you know, oh, I cried when your show went off the air. And she said, you know, I maybe this is, you know, crazy or something, but I always thought of Guiding Light, you know, that it always focused much more on sort of a family kind of thing. She said, you know, other shows, you know, yes, you had the clone story, and yes, you had this other, you know, a couple of quirky times. But she said it always seemed like it was about the relationships, about the dynamics between, a husband and wife, a father and a son, the mother and daughter. She said that to me was always the core of what that show did so well. And just a quick comment on your what you just said about casting. I mean, that really speaks a lot to we really had some really good casting directors over the years.
Definitely.
Who spent a lot of time going to a lot of theater in New York and combing, you know, not just New York, but, you know, L.A. and sometimes Houston or Chicago or other places to really find the right person for the right role.
Yeah, they found Brittany Snow in Florida.
Yeah, and they found, you know, and Hayden Panettiere, and, you know, we had a lot of really amazing people come through, and some go on to do other things, and some who just stayed and did what they did there and did it well. But to me, I don't think we had a lot of people on the show who looked like, well, earlier we were talking about sort of like sort of a mocking the genre of soap opera. You know, I feel like we always had pretty real, honest-looking, true people on our show.
Yeah.
And people who were and actors who were just good, skilled, good and skilled at what they do.
Right.
And it wasn't very often that we would have somebody come on and go, gee, I don't know if this is really going to work out, you know. That that was really few and far between. It's many people come through those doors.
We definitely want to be conscious of both your time. So we've got a couple calls on hold. Do you have time to take a couple calls?
Yes.
I'm fine.
Okay. All righty. Well, let's see.
I don't have a show tonight, so I'm fine.
Well, Kim does, and we don't want to hold her up too long. So
no, I'm okay.
I'm good till about midnight or so. So go ahead.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, did everyone hear that? All right. No, the first call we have up is David. David, you're on with Robert and Kim.
Hi, David.
Hi, Robert. Hey, Kim.
Hi, David.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I miss you both on the air.
Thank you. Thank you.
And
my question is,
I'm in the upstate New York area.
Okay, great.
And my question to you is, for Kim, who do you think your biggest rival was for Josh and Robert? Who do you think the biggest rival for you was for Reba?
Well, I'll answer immediately and say Annie Dutton. The wonderful Cynthia Watros was definitely Reba's biggest rival for Josh's love. Until, you know, that they would have been a very successful couple had I not decided to come back to the show. I think Annie and Josh would have been just fine if Reba hadn't come back to the show.
as a ghost, no less.
Yeah, exactly.
For the first week, anyway.
Right.
For the first few days,
And Robert?
I've never really thought about it that way before. That's a really tough question. I mean, I think my first answer is HB.
Yeah.
Or Billy. I mean, I think that, you know, when your father or your brother is, you know, involved with your, you know, significant other, that's a big thing. I mean, I think Jeffrey was a rival in a different way, but I always kind of played it that Josh liked Jeffrey, that he got along with Jeffrey. You know, it wasn't a battle. It was like he appreciated who he was. And in a weird way, I think Josh appreciated what Jeffrey brought to Reba's life that maybe he couldn't. You know,
and I think the other successful relationship that Reba had, but you weren't in the picture then, was with Kyle Sampson.
Oh, I was
going to
say, Buzz.
Oh, that was beautiful.
You know,
now you were around for that.
But Josh, the weird thing with Josh was that I think he always liked the people that Reva was with. He liked Buzz. He liked Jeffrey. You know, he liked Richard.
Well,
even, you know, whatever.
Well, that's because Reva has good taste in men.
I guess.
You just had really bad taste in women.
Wait, we're talking about Josh or Robert?
No,
yeah.
Our characters.
Now, I have to, Robert, I'm inclined
or
to
maybe,
agree with Reva.
Maybe Josh was less threatened by other men with Reva than Reva was threatened by women with Josh.
Oh, well, that could be.
Maybe, you know, when I think of that, I think about that great scene in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid when Paul Newman comes out and Robert Redford comes out and he says, "What are you doing with my girl?" And he says, "Well, I'm going to be with your girl for a while." And Redford kind of looks at him and goes, "Take her."
And then that's what you used to say all the time, Robert, when I have
Josh
scenes with Mark Dolby's.
Hey, you know what, Buzz? Go to town. Have a good time. I'll still be here when she's done with you.
David, did you have any other calls for Robert and Kim?
No, I don't.
I'm sorry,
I just wanted to thank you both.
Thank you for calling, David, and thank you for your question.
And I wanted to end with saying if you ever were together on stage or anything else, I'd come see you both 63 times.
Oh, you're sweet. Thank you.
Definitely.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, David.
Thank you, David.
Yeah.
All right, the next column hole, we have Dom. Dom, go ahead. You're with Robert and Kim.
Good evening, everybody. Good evening, Ms. Zimmer. Mr. Newman, how are you doing this evening?
Good. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you.
Yes, I always get nervous when I speak to anybody who was on Guiding Light because it was Guiding Light that made me a fan of soap operas. So,
oh, wonderful. Good.
Actually, specifically the relationship between Olivia and Natalia. That was what drew me in, and from there, I became a fan of everything else. This was, however, April 2009, so needless to say, I was a little late to the party. My question, well, I do have a couple questions. I wanted to ask Kim a question. Minus a five-year gap in between 1990 and 1995, you were on Guiding Light for a total of 26 years, and they put Reva Shane through the ringer.
Right.
Cloned, time-traveled. You got amnesia, thought you were an Amish woman, you were a princess. when you got these scripts and you saw what they were going to do to Reva, did you ever have this feeling of, oh, dear God, what are they going to put me through this time?
To be honest, no. I loved everything that they asked me to do because it was a challenge. I was challenged so much on that show, I can't even begin to tell you. And that's what actors love most, is to be challenged. We were asked to, Robert and I both, were asked to make unbelievable stories as believable to the fans as we possibly could. Mm-hmm. And I think most of the time we were successful. Because even with the clone story, people hated that story until the writers and the powers that be decided to kill her. And then the fans were mad that they were copping out on the story. The fans were just starting to like the clone, and then they killed her, and then the fans were pissed that they were killing the clone. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, pardon me?
I was going to say, I was going to ask, well, what I was going to ask was, that ties into my next question. Was it difficult to play both Reva and the clone?
For me or for her?
knowing Josh's eyes was lit up at the concept, but my question for Kim was, well,
I know.
Because, you know, Josh may have been a nice guy, but let's face facts here. Anyways, what was it like for you as an actress? Because when you have one person playing the dual roles, that's always a bit of a challenge. So I just was wondering, what was your thoughts on playing both yourself and a clone of you?
Well, the only difficulties that I had with the clone was that in reality, she, because of the rapid growth serum that they introduced so that I could play both characters, in reality, she would have had the brain of a week-old child because she, you know, they aged this poor clone so fast with the rapid growth serum that, you know, so I tried to give her an innocent kind of naivety quality to the clone, but yet they were writing her to have sex scenes with Josh and to do all of this adult stuff. So, you know, I would struggle with that. I'd say, how does she know the lyrics to Bewitched, Bothered, and Bedazzled? You know, how does she know some of the stuff you're asking her to know when she's, you know, a month old?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Seriously.
Yeah, indeed. I should point out that indirectly, your five-year gap from The Guiding Light in terms of the storyline led to the introduction of Crystal Chappell's Olivia Spencer, and I was just wondering, because
right.
the five-year gap in between between saying I'm coming by driving off the bridge and coming and rewriting, Reva found herself on the island of San Cristobal, married a prince, and had a kid named Jonathan, all the while thinking she was somebody else. And then 4 years later, 1999, Crystal Chappell shows up as they reintroduce San Cristobal. I was wondering, what were your thoughts on them taking what they had written during your hiatus 4 years previously and tying that into the debut of a new character?
Well, my, you know, I kept pitching my own stories, and they wouldn't buy them. what I really wanted Reva to have been doing, there was a movie that I used to love that Gina Davis starred in called, now I can't even remember what it was called, but she had amnesia, and it turned out that she was an assassin, and I loved 100 Nights or something it was called. I can't really remember what it was. But I always thought it would be interesting to have explored the fact that Reva had turned was a trained assassin when she returned to Springfield, and that she would just assassinate all the bad people in Springfield, and no one would know it was her because she was Reva Shane.
I'm sorry that would have been interesting.
You wouldn't have that.
I would have buy Olivia as a nun before that, which ties into my other question, the 10,000th guiding light. You're on the lighthouse. You faint. You come to, and what happens? You've got the Spaldings where the Coopers should be. You got the Coopers where the Spaldings should be, and you've got Olivia as a nun. Now, if Olivia's character during that time, that if you knew what Olivia was going through at that point, much like Reva, you would have been like, the hell's going on? So what I want to ask, this was the 10,000 show, by the way, and I wanted to ask you, what was it like to, you know, go through the Freaky Friday plot, basically?
Oh, I think there were some of us that really enjoyed those. You mean the when it focused on a single character?
I meant the one where Reva...
No, wasn't there Britt? I just called you Britt. Kim,
that's
wasn't
okay.
there a...
You answer this question, Robert, because, you know,
well,
I would do stories and forget them.
I can't. You know, I can't.
But anyways.
I think that there wasn't there one episode, Kim, where we all sort of switched roles? And
yeah.
We did,
no, I remember the
with,
episode.
Yeah, that's what he's asking you about. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember the episode. I don't remember what I did in it. Sorry, but
yeah,
I don't.
Yeah, right.
All I remember was that
storyline... That storyline was during Kim Zimmer's dark time on Guiding Light. Let's just put it that way.
I just thought it was especially funny, like I said, to see Olivia as a nun. If you remember what the character was going through at that point, this was a year before Natalia showed up. This was 3 years before they fell in love. So she was still kind of in that, you know, kind of that arrogant man crazy sort of thing. Although I think this was around the time she found out she got raped by Jeffrey. But anyways, that was kind of a, you know, I like how when you have the soap operas, I like it when they change things up. I like it when they do things that are different, you know, from the norm, like aligning yourself with Marvel Comics anyways. I know there's a lot of callers, but I did just want to ask one question to Robert.
He loves kissing Crystal Chappelle.
I preferred her kissing Jessica Lachia, but anyways. your relationship, I should say, Josh and Reva were the major couple, let's face it, for the better part of 26 years. Even when you guys were with other people, there was a pull between the two of you. When Guiding Light ended, last shot was Josh, Reva, and little boy Colin in the truck going off to parts unknown. She says the word always. Do you think that was that was the best way for the show to go out?
I think they did an okay job with that last show. I think the idea of going to, like 1 year from now was a good idea. I think anybody could sit back and sort of armchair quarterback and write their last episode and what it should be. But I do think it's fair to say that that last shot, I'm not sure about the kid, but Josh and Reva together at the lighthouse, sort of driving off into wherever. I think that was pretty much exactly how the show should end. And I think the word always was a good choice on the part of the writers for the last word of the show.
Great.
I'm not sure if that answers your question completely.
Oh,
but,
it answers my question.
I think there's 10 ways to write things, and I think that was as good as any that I could probably think of, Josh and Reva riding off into the sunset.
I agree. When you have 72 years of history, how do you bring it to a close? You take two beloved couples who had been through hell and back, finally coming together, realize that they belong together, and you have them driving off into the sunset, and just like the classic fairy tale, you have the words "the end" come up. That brought me to a tear more than anything else, because it was like it was a storybook romance, and you have a storybook ending. When you have seven decades of material and love and respect for everybody, and you come and you say those words, that was pretty moving.
Well, I remember a few months before that. I think maybe even a year before that, I had my contract was coming up, and I had a negotiation that I was going through, and I really was, and I knew the show was sort of, lumbering to an end. We hadn't gotten the notice yet, but I felt like it was coming. I felt like it was coming, and I was contemplating leaving the show at that time. A contract was done. It was like, maybe it's time for me to let go now and move on. And I remember saying to my wife at one point, I think I want to be there for that last episode. I think I want to be there when this show is done. I've invested, 28 years of my life into this show. I think I need to be there if and when it ends. And assuming it's ending in the next 10 years, but I think I need to be there. And then I also remember doing an interview a couple months. It was well before the ending was written. And they said, how do you see the last show? And I said, I don't know where Josh and Reva are going to be in their relationship. I don't know where she's going to be with, with Jeffrey.
Jeffrey.
I don't know where Josh is going to be. But I'm guessing the last scene of the show will involve Josh and Reva at a lighthouse. And it did,
And
I guess even then I was thinking that's pretty much how the show should end. That's how it should be.
That was great. That was definitely.
I often have fans ask me on the street, "What are Josh and Reva doing now?"
Yeah.
And I think of course I'm thinking, first of all, they're not real, so I don't.
Yeah.
They're not doing anything because they're not, people.
Nobody's writing.
But,
nothing's from words in our mouth.
But I love that. I love the idea that I remember reading a thing about The Sopranos when it went off the air, and I remember the writers saying how sad the people were that they weren't going to be able to that it was as if the lives were going to go on of these people, but we weren't going to be able to watch anymore. And I think that that's what a lot of the fans experience, that as if Josh and Reva's life has continued on, but they can't watch anymore. So where are they today, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I get fans all the time. The lady today that I was talking to in Costco was really emotional about it, you know? She was sad that her favorite characters weren't on the air anymore. And it's been a difficult journey for her to let go of these people that she loved.
I can understand that completely. And by the way, also for the record, the film style you guys used for the last year and a half, the on camera, the more on location stuff you did in feedback, I say this to every person that worked on Guiding Light in the last year and a half. I loved it. Not a lot of people loved it, but I loved it because it was a documentary feel. You know, you used real locations and real sets and buildings and everything. You made you feel like you were on a fly on a wall to real people and real events, which was different than what was on soaps at the time. You guys have been innovators for 7 decades, and I loved it. I'm sad that, you know, that's how that the show ended, but I'm happy that at least it bought you another year and a half. I told Ron Raines, space it for a second, I told Ron Raines when I talked to him, I would rather you guys end at 72 than end at 70. So I'm happy that you at least, you know, went over the 7-decade mark.
No, thank you. Thank you very much for your comments. I appreciate that. Thank you.
I appreciate you guys. Good luck in whatever you guys do, and you all have a good evening.
Thanks for calling in, Dom.
All right, up next we have Sunday.
Just real quick before we get... Wait, Robert, go ahead. Hi. How are you? What's your name again?
Sunday.
How are you, Sunday?
It's so fitting that you're possibly our last caller.
Isn't it, though? I think it's so fitting.
Okay, I have to say something about this caller. I actually know Sunday very well. And last night at the curtain call at our show in San Francisco, we're taking our bows. And somebody yelled out in the house, "Kim Zimmer!" And I was like, "Oh my God, Sunday came here to surprise me for my birthday." I thought for sure.
Aww.
So I got done with the show and I texted Sunday and I said, "Are you in San Francisco?"
Okay, seriously, I love you, but if I was there, you would have known it because we would have been out for drinks.
Well, that's what I said, because I said the minute I walked out the stage door, I would have seen you.
Yeah. Well, happy birthday tomorrow.
Thank you, Sunday.
Yeah.
You're welcome. Hey, Robert, how are you?
I'm okay, Sunday. How are you doing?
Lovely. I'm actually standing outside a bar on 50th and 9th in Manhattan, so I apologize for the noise. Oh, you're at Hibernia, too?
Look to your left right now.
Okay, first of all, no offense to the host, but I disagree about Lindsay being Kim's daughter. Laura Bell Bundy was totally a Robert and Kim child, if ever there was a Kim and Robert child.
And that was my immediate, I think Robert and I both kind of went, Lindsay?
Yeah, it was just totally Laura Bell Bundy.
Right. I couldn't agree more.
Who in reality, Kim, we might as well come clean. Who in reality actually is our love child?
She is our love child, yes.
And yes, I kind of already knew. So, but the main reason I called, of course, was to wish you happy birthday tomorrow. And second of all...
And your flowers are beautiful.
Oh, thank you. And when is your CD coming out, Kim?
I hate you.
I love you. So when is that CD coming out? Because I need to get a few copies for some friends.
In about a year.
I think that's bull. You know what?
It's gonna be in the back of my second book. How's that?
Oh, okay. And when you end up on Broadway,
mm-hmm.
you know when, not if, when
yes.
you end up on Broadway. I think
mm-hmm.
you need to have a night and Robert come and all of us get together. Does that sound good?
Wouldn't that be fun? How's that sound to you, Robert?
Okay.
He's easy.
I think that's what I hear, but
I think
And Robert, you're still not afraid of these girls, are you?
Well, no more than I'm still afraid of you, Kim.
Oh,
I, you know, it's very, you know, it's always awkward to work opposite a woman that you know could beat the crap out of you. Then,
or to know that she has an entourage that will do that for her, right?
Well, and that's what I was getting to. When she has this posse with her that could also beat the crap out of you, it's a little unnerving. I mean, I think of myself as a reasonably manly man, but I'm surrounded by women.
And you are, dear.
I'm surrounded by women who could just, you know, hurt me.
But Robert, we love you, Robert. We do. We love you.
They do. We talk about you every time we're together.
Every time we're together. And Kim, I just wanted to let you know, no fear, I'm not in the audience. I'm actually not coming until the big group comes in April.
In Tucson. Okay, great.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Robert,
okay.
You should come join us in Tucson.
I'll put that on my calendar. I will. Tucson.
Have you seen Kim? That would be April 7th.
So
April
7th, I'll put on my calendar, do not be in Tucson on April 7th.
Robert, have you seen Kim in Wicked yet?
I have not. And you got me thinking that I need to sort of look at that tour schedule and see if there's, is there any...
Yes, the next one, Robert, is when you make your next trip out to L.A., which should be in the next month. I'll be in Costa Mesa.
Well, I'll be out there. I'm flying on the 21st, I think, to go shoot on Crystal's show.
Okay, the 21st
of
February?
Yeah.
Well, that's when I'm going to be in Costa Mesa. So, yes, you must come drive down and see me.
I will.
Okay, Robert.
I will do that.
I have to tell you, my Jeeva heart is a little broken because you haven't been there yet. Just a little, but... You need to remedy that, okay? Because my diva heart can't take it.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Well, y'all have a good night, and thank you so much for your time. Thank you, hosts, for Blog Talk Radio. And Kim, love you, Rocket.
We'll see you in April. Okay, honey.
Sunday.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Sunday.
I just have to throw in that she's the queen bee of this posse that Robert's talking about. This group of men and women that count, that number probably 10, that will come just about anywhere to see me do just about anything. And I adore this group of people, and they're great supporters of mine, and I really thank them for being so devoted to Josh and Reva and to me, my name being Kim Zimmer.
Thanks for clarifying that.
Thank you.
Well, it has been an absolute pleasure having you with
Thank
us tonight,
you.
Both of you. It's you know, such a longtime fan of Guiding Light, but I think, you know, I failed to preface as the show came on tonight and saying that my personal all time super couple in daytime was no doubt Josh and Reva. So
thanks.
This has been a real treat for me tonight, as well as many, many Guiding Light fans out there. And before I let you guys go, we had one question from the chat room. Someone was asking, wanted to ask you, Kim, what was it like to work with Jeff Ranson on Guiding Light?
I'm going to tell you something. Robert and I both, when they hired Jeff Ranson to play Shane, we both kind of went, oh, my God, we finally have our Shane. I mean, we had some great kids that played Shane, but Jeff Ranson looked so much like he could have been our child. You know, he looked so much like Robert. And he you know, there were things about him that reminded me of me, too. So we had a ball. And the whole dynamic for me as an actor to have the opportunity to work with Jeff Ranson as Shane and Tom Pelfrey as Jonathan was one of the highlights of my career at Guiding Light, to balance both those boys' personalities. It was great fun.
Jeff was also there, and I think this was because of him, where they did some of the best writing I think they had ever done for Shane, where they really, mm-hmm. Shane really came into his own as a character. Mm-hmm. You know, Mara, mm-hmm. Mara had a lot of, you know, strong periods of time, not just strong actresses playing Mara, but also strong periods of time where they were writing uh-huh. a character really well. I think when Jeff was playing the role, they had some good stuff going on, and he handled it beautifully. And he almost right. played my son again. When I auditioned for, when I did the role on Criminal Minds, I ran into Jeff at the audition because he was auditioning to play my son on Criminal Minds.
Oh, wow.
Who I ended up shooting by the end of the episode.
Oh, jeez.
but it wasn't meant to be. It was just really cool to run into him. And here we are auditioning for father and son again. Wouldn't that be
yeah.
something?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, he's a good man.
I am trying to be mindful of your time, and we do have a few more calls on hold, but if I'm going to let y'all make that call. If you have time, great. If not, that's okay. I mean,
well,
you
what time is it?
It's for you, it's 7.
It's 5:20, right?
5:20.
Yes,
yeah.
5:20. Mm-hmm. I have about 10 more minutes.
Okay.
At 5:30, we're going to have to wrap it up.
Okay. Perfect. That's fair enough. All right. Well, we'll
How about
get
you, Robert?
I have till midnight, so I'm good.
Oh. Yeah, you should. We're not worried about him.
He really wasn't joking at all. All right, well, then we'll continue then.
Let me look at the calendar. Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, great. Yeah, we're set. All right, well, we'll continue on with these last few. And moving right along, we've got Yvette.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm so excited.
Hey,
I thought you weren't going to be able to talk to me, so I was a little bit bummed. But
we're here.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you guys because I loved the show, and I cried like crazy, like a baby, when it ended. And I can tell you, my first two children, one was named Josh, and I did not name my daughter Reva.
Nobody ever does. They name their animals Reva.
But I did name her Melinda for Melinda Sue.
Oh, good. That's cute. Yes.
But I don't want to take too much of your time. I'm very happy that I got to at least speak to you for a moment. But it was a great show, and I am very disappointed that it was stopped. Very disappointed.
Yes.
But,
yeah.
Reva, are you coming to Boston on your show by any chance?
Well, there's the possibility if I extend and they don't put me in the Broadway company that I would maybe be coming to Boston because it's coming there sometime in November, I think.
Yeah, I thought I was looking. Yeah.
So
I'll keep an eye out then. I'll follow you on Twitter.
Because that is the company that I'm involved with, the one that would be in Boston if I'm still with it. So
I hope so I can go and see you.
All
right. Well, I won't take too much of your time because I want everybody else to get their time. But it was a pleasure to speak to both of you.
Thank you.
And good
luck
with everything that you have.
Thank you, Beth.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Beth.
Bye.
All right. Next up, we have Amy. Amy, you're on with Robert and Kim.
Hi. Hi, Robert. Hi, Kim. I just wanted to let you guys know that I've watched the show since I was 5 years old, and I just wanted to say you guys were the best couple ever. And Kim, you were the first actress that ever made me cry. I could cry on every single episode. That every time you cry, I'm like, gosh darn it, there she goes again. Get me crying.
if you went through what
I used to
watch it. You'd cry too.
I know. But, yeah, I used to watch it with my grandmother. I'd come home from school when I was 5 and watch it with her. And we lived in upstate New York.
That's
and now I live in California. And I just went to the General Hospital fan club weekend and met Laura. I've met her with her wine tasting and stuff, and I was like, I told her, I said, the only person I really want to meet is Kim and Robert.
I'm sure she loved that.
Yes, she did. I think I got a little tipsy that night at the wine tasting. I just wanted to let you, I wanted to know what you were doing. I know, Robert, you've been doing Broadway and stuff. And I just heard you were in California, Kim. And I live in California right now. I don't know what you – I didn't hear
where,
what you were
where
doing.
Where are you? I'm doing,
I live in
I'm
Modesto.
Oh, okay. I'm doing the first national tour of Wicked right now.
You're doing,
I'm doing the first national tour of Wicked, yes. And I'm in San Francisco right now. And then on the 18th of February through March 19th, I'll be in Costa Mesa.
Costa Mesa.
In Orange County, yeah.
Okay, Orange County, okay. So
yeah.
You're doing Wicked there, so I can look up for tickets for that.
Yeah,
that'd
definitely.
And then, Robert, what are you doing right now?
Actually, I'm heading that way, too. I'm leaving in a couple of weeks to go to shoot on Crystal Chappelle's show, Venice, the web series. Yeah. I'll be there for a couple of weeks. And, Kim, I'll be spending much of my time in Newport Beach, which is, like, next door to
Perfect.
Costa Mesa.
It's like a hop, skip, and a jump. Yeah, bring your
I'll
mom
over,
to see the show.
I will definitely be over
oh,
to
she's
see
in
you.
Florida. That's
no,
right. It's
I'll
not your mom that's...
I have relatives everywhere, Kim. You know that.
I know you. I do. I do know
my,
that. I just can't remember which one's where.
I'll bring my father and stepmother to see the show.
There you go.
Or
there
maybe
you
my
go.
Sister. Or, yeah, but I'll come to see you. But
Cool.
So,
well, thanks for calling
here.
In, Amy.
Thank you, Amy.
Is she gone?
Hello.
I think
Hello?
She dropped. I think her call
I think
dropped.
We're all gone.
Yeah, I think
her
call dropped.
And her call dropped. But I have a question from Silas in the chat room. He said to ask Kim how much of her training at the American Conservatory Theater has influenced her career.
Well, I have to say that it what I learned there. I have to make sure who's the caller's name to make sure they weren't one of my teachers.
Sorry. His name is Silas, and he's in the chat room.
Okay. I learned a lot of life lessons when I was at ACT, but what the technique that they taught there, I wasn't a big I'm not a big method actress, and they taught a lot of method there. So I have to say that I learned a lot about myself while I was at ACT, but I learned how I didn't want to act while I was there. How's that? if that's confusing. They just taught a technique that I couldn't wrap my brain around. So I lasted a year there, and I learned a lot, like I said, about myself. But as far as acting, I'm a big learn by doing, and that's really what I spent the next, 3 years doing before Guiding Light happened for me. So,
Good answer.
Yeah. It just
that's
so
a good
happens
answer.
he just called in, so I'm going to go ahead and bring him on real quick.
Oh, good.
Silas,
okay.
Silas, go ahead.
Hey, how are you? Hi, Kim.
Hi,
Robert. Kim,
hi, how are you?
I'm great. I'm really great. I'm glad that you two are doing well. Kim, I have a question that's haunted me for years because I fell in love with you when you took over Kathleen Turner's role
right
as Nola Aldridge.
Yeah.
On the Doctors. I mean,
yes.
The Doctors, brought to you by Colgate Palmolive.
Right. Can you believe it?
Yeah, I can. Question I have, I've always wondered, is this. How intimidating was it for you to step into the feet of Kathleen Turner and make Nola Aldrich your own?
It really wasn't that difficult because it was the first gig that I was doing, really, as far as professionally. And for me, Kathleen Turner wasn't anybody when I took over that role, seriously. She was just an actress playing a part. I came on that show as an actress taking over a role, and I embraced it as if I was creating the character myself. And it didn't hurt the fact that we were so similar in type, Kathleen and myself, that I don't think it was a big shock for the audience when I took over the role. But as far as my embracing that character, I just treated it as if I had been playing the character all along. So I wasn't nervous. I really seriously can say that I was not nervous about taking over this role because
did you like the character?
Oh, I loved her. I had so much fun.
And of course, Alec Baldwin is still a dear friend of mine to this day. He, of course, you know, I worked with Alec on The Doctor. So, yeah.
Kathleen was a nobody, like I said, that's when I first got to know Kim Zimmer was
right.
The Doctors.
Thank you.
It was an epic soap, and you went on to make history with Guiding Light.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, it was great. I learned a lot doing that show from all those wonderful actors I worked with on it. James Pritchett and, John Rowlands, David O'Brien, Nancy Pinkerton. Oh, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it was great. Larry Weber.
It was an amazing cast. It was an absolutely amazing cast. And it's just funny that you went from Colgate-Palmolive to Procter & Gamble. I always thought that was funny.
Well, you know, there was a reason why they were called soap operas.
You darn tootin'. But both of you, thank you for all of your years, and thank you for giving back to the fans, even with Guiding Light gone. And I'm glad
thank
that your careers
you.
Are still moving. And Robert,
thank
it's
you.
Great that it's great that you're doing web series. I wish you guys would bring Steamboat back.
Oh, yeah. Michael's got something else cooking. I don't know what it is, but he's working on something else.
I hope so, because he's a talent that's wasted, too.
Yes.
We should see more of him. But anyway, you both have a good weekend. I'll let you get back
thank
to the
you.
Show. And
thanks so
for
much for
my
calling
call.
In. Thank you.
Thank you, Silas.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Silas.
Okay, I am going to have to go now, so.
Yeah. We want to thank you for joining us tonight, you and Robert both. It's been such a pleasure, and we wish you only the best with the rest of the play that you have going. And we'd love to have you back in the near future.
Yes, great. Thank you
thank
so
you,
much
anytime.
For having us.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Robert. Thank you. Thanks.
Love you, Kim.
Love you, too,
Bubble.
See
ya. Bye-bye.
See ya. Good night.
Bye. And God bless.
My phone, my thing is going crazy here. My board, it's like trying
yeah,
to.
Yeah, mine is going crazy. I can see it. I know what you're talking about. I'm seeing a lot of the same.
It's spinning.
Wow. We had an hour, well, over an hour with Kim and an hour and a half with Robert. I mean, what a treat. Now, I can tell you, if no one guessed already, this was probably the highlight of my day, and I mean, this is a dream come true. And Pam, I just have to say thank you for giving me the opportunity to co-host with you, because as much as I've enjoyed co-hosting to this point, you know, and I enjoy every show, that was a real treat for me. I remember watching Guiding Light for many, many years and saying to myself, oh, I would love to meet Kim Zimmer one day. I would love to meet, you know, Josh and Reva, and, you know, because it really is true. I think Silas said in the chat room that, you know, that show is just, it's an American television icon. It is, you know, it changed who we were as viewers, and it just drew us in. And for no one who ever had the opportunity to watch Guiding Light, you should go and just YouTube some of the old episodes and kind of get a feel for that whole dynamic, because it was a great show. And it really did make you feel like you were one of the families on there. And you couldn't help but just feel this huge sense of loss, you know, when they went off the air and when it was announced they were leaving, you know, daytime. And it was just the unthinkable for any soap opera fan to think that daytime dramas were going to go away. Who ever, I mean, growing up, you would have never thought. You would have thought they would be the last shows on TV standing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't pan out that way. So, but it's really exciting that, you know, in their case, that they still, you know, as Silas said, they still, you know, play to their fans, and they still make the fans feel just as important today as they did, you know, back when the show was live and active. So it's been a real treat tonight for, I think, not only myself, but for all the Guiding Light fans out there who have tuned in. And so we do want to thank all the listeners for being here tonight, and for those who called in but we didn't get around to getting your call, we do apologize, and we do always try to get to every call when people call in, but sometimes it's very difficult. Some calls run longer than others, and we, you know, it's hard to gauge that sometimes, but we hope to have them on again in the future, and maybe next time we'll just do a show with all fan calls. We won't talk. we'll just have the fan calls come in and just have a really enjoyable show. So, but I'm so glad you're here, and thank you for letting me kind of take the reins tonight, Pam. This was a real treat for me, I must tell you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to sleep tonight.
I probably won't. I mean, it's just, as a matter of fact, while they were talking, I was looking up Wicked online and to see if possibly it was coming to the Carolinas anywhere, north or south. And it is coming to Charlotte, North Carolina, but she will not be with that company when it comes. So apparently she's just, you know, doing the East, the West Coast version of Wicked, and then they have a company for the East Coast. And so I'm kind of bummed about that because I would certainly make the drive to Charlotte to see her if she were coming. And then she said she was going to be in Tucson in April, and I'm thinking, wow, if it had only been last year, you know, when I was there myself, I could have caught a show, but
yeah.
Timing. But this is great. Having them here has definitely been enjoyable. So we have a great big weekend ahead.
Yes, we do.
You know, it's kind of like this is the kickoff weekend. And by the way, you know, with this being the month of love, I can't think of a better way to kick off our month of love than to have, you know, one of Daytime Drama's biggest super couples, Josh and Reva, Kim Zimmer,
yeah.
and Robert Newman. So, wow.
Yeah.
So, but yeah,
and
February
is our theme month of Love is in the Air.
Not every
show is going to be about that, but that's we're trying to go with a theme every month. So, Love is in the Air is for February, and there's your Josh and Reva to start it off, and have some more coming up. But tomorrow we have two shows. We have one at 5 o'clock Eastern time, and that is with Ellie Van, and she's a singer, songwriter. And then at 7 p.m. Eastern time, we have Alana Stewart, and we're going to talk with her about Farrah Fawcett and her journey with her through Farrah's fight through her cancer. Unfortunately, she didn't make it through, but tomorrow would have also been Farrah's 66th birthday, so we're going to pay tribute to her with Alana Stewart. Go ahead.
And do you know something? I noticed someone, one of the callers wished Kim happy birthday tomorrow, so she and Farrah Fawcett have the same birthday.
I don't know
if you caught that, but I didn't want to jump in and say anything. But,
yeah.
You know, when they were talking, but I picked right up on that because I knew what we had coming up tomorrow. So I was like, wow, you know. That's really unique and very interesting.
Alana Stewart is an actress herself. She's won two Emmys, and she's an author, and she's on the Farrah Fawcett Foundation and for the cancer charity. Plus TV show host and many other things. So she's going to join us at 7 p.m. tomorrow Eastern time, and I would say please join us because I think it's going to be a great show.
And if no one figured out who she is from all of that, which was a very, very good description, she also was married to George Hamilton, and she was married to Rod Stewart.
Exactly.
So she's a beautiful lady inside and out, and it's going to be really neat to talk to her. I imagine tomorrow will be somewhat emotional for her.
Yes.
So it'll be a great show, you know, to talk about and Farrah Fawcett and to get her take on a lot of that. So we look forward to that.
Definitely. And with that, we want to thank everybody for listening tonight. And, Dawn, you did fine, even though you were a maniac being nervous.
I don't usually get nervous, but I must tell you, tonight, this was the first time probably since we've been doing this show together that I was actually nervous. I mean, there's been plenty of times you've been like, I'm nervous, and I'm like, why are you nervous? They're just people, you know. But tonight, you could say that to me, and I could completely identify. Although people probably know by now, we give each other a hard time on a lot of different things, and that's one of them.
Right.
but yeah, you know, we all have our favorites, I guess, and so I tried not to be starstruck, but I'm glad that the caller started calling so I could just shut up and let them talk.
You're such
and
a nutcase.
Well, the listeners were probably glad about that, too. So, it's been a great show, a great night, and thank you for hanging in there, Pam, because I know you've been quite sick all week, and I'm glad to say that I'm happy to hear you're on the mend. It seems that you are, and I hope that improves as the weekend goes along.
Thank you. And with that, we're going to go ahead and close the show. Join us at 5 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow for Ellie Vern. And I think that's going to be a phenomenal show, too, because she's a very talented singer-songwriter. And, Dawn, you go ahead and push the buttons because my computer's not working. God bless everybody. Have a good night.
Good night, everyone.
Tonight's show has been brought to you by One Taste of Main Street Cake Shop, baked from scratch, custom-made cakes and cupcakes, and you'll be hooked. Every cake is made to order with only the finest and freshest ingredients. This is no ordinary bakery. Cakes are never pre-made. Main Street Cake Shop is in demand, having provided cakes and cupcakes for numerous prestigious events, bridal fairs, and venues. Owned and operated by April Murray, she has garnered many awards for not only her exquisite cake designs, but also for their incredible taste. If you're looking for a cake for any occasion, or cupcakes in a variety of flavors, then Main Street Cake Shop is the place. Visit them on the web at mainstreetcakeshop.com.